afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have just convened the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for February the 12th, 2018. We are gathered here today for the purpose of two work sessions. One, the audit of...
Just one work session, sorry.
Audit of the Department of Environmental Quality Air Quality Program. And with that, I would invite Mr. Whitman and anybody else from Team DEQ that wants to come forward.
I'm sorry, Senator Johnson. Normally, we would have the Secretary of State come first and kind of give an overview.
Forgive me. This is a newbie mistake, and that explains the back and forth.
I should have been paying closer attention.
With that, I would invite up, just as it's listed on the agenda, the Secretary of State's Audit Division staff.
I need to pay closer attention. Sorry.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Committee Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present on our audit of the DEQ's air quality permitting process. For the record, my name is Andrew Love, and I am an audit manager with the Secretary of State Audit Division. With me is Steve Nguyen. He was the lead on this engagement. The purpose of this audit was to identify ways DEQ could improve their air quality permitting process. To address our audit objective, the team interviewed staff, they interviewed managers, they interviewed outside stakeholders, they reviewed documentation, they reviewed policies and procedures, and finally they reviewed and analyzed air quality data. Overall, the team found that 43% of DEQ's most complex state and federal air quality permits were overdue for renewal. We also looked at some of the past permits that were issued and noticed that they had issues with issuing those on a timely manner. And then also we also found that there was some challenges with doing inspections as well. We made recommendations.
But could you, when you say challenges with inspections, could you be a little bit more specific, please?
Well, colleague here, he will go through in more detail.
Thank you.
I'm giving the kind of the overview.
100,000 feet. Thank
yes.
you.
So we recommended that the agency take action to improve its internal air quality permitting processes. We recommended they also enhance the guidance that they provide to both the applicants and also to their permit writers. And finally, after looking at their internal processes and improving their guidance, we ask that the organization do a staffing analysis and to identify what their staffing needs and their current workload needs and to seek additional resources where necessary.
While you're still at 100,000 feet, was there any discussion, you say, need more staffing and talk to the legislature and the governor? My question is, was there any consideration giving to doing less of other stuff and managing within existing staff?
Before we talked about staffing, we really decided that they need to do some work in terms of improving their internal processes. They were efforting a lean process, so they were going to take a look at how they could improve that overall process. And we asked them to improve the guidance because one of the major concerns that permit writers were telling us that they get a lot of incomplete applications, so they had to spend a lot of their own time trying to connect with the applicant. So other states had better guidance so that the applicants were able to complete them on time. And then finally, we asked
any discussion about whether or not the forms are so difficult that normal people can't fill them out. If there's a high percentage of people that are turning in incomplete forms, does that say maybe the forms are inscrutable?
Definitely, and that's where we were getting at in terms of, excuse me, committee chairs, members of the committee. That's where we were getting at in terms of the type of guidance. We do recognize that these air permits are very highly technical and that our larger organizations like Intel would have the environmentalists and staff who could do those, but some of the smaller entities and mid-level businesses would have more difficulties, especially with how permits change over time, especially with federal regulations. We found, and I'm taking over a little bit of his presentation, but I apologize. We found that often the permit writers would look to other states' websites to learn about new guidance instead of what was available on DEQ's website. When I personally looked at the website, there was a lot of broken links, a lot of things that kind of worked in circular manner, which would be frustrating to both an applicant and permit writers. And so that's what we were getting at in terms of providing better guidance. And then in terms of the staffing workload and analysis we're talking about is not necessarily mean that you need additional staff. One, you could take efforts to fill those that are underfilled, those positions that are underfilled, but also kind of you look at how you utilize your current staff loads. If an area which is struggling to have to get the permits on time, could you pull staff from another region to help bolster those the staffing? That's where we're getting it in terms of our recommendations. I'll turn it over to Steve here. He'll have more details for you.
Welcome, Mr. Wynn.
Thank you, committee chairs and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present the findings from our audit. As you probably know, air quality permits regulate the types and amounts of air pollution that businesses are allowed to emit. That's based on federal pollution limits set by the Clean Air Act, and then state limits that are established in state laws and DEQ rules. Again, the purpose of our audit was to determine how DEQ could improve its air quality permitting process to better safeguard Oregon's air quality. And to reiterate a little bit of what Andrew said, we found that in order to help reduce a significant backlog in air quality permits, DEQ should evaluate staffing and workloads among its air quality permit writers and provide better guidance. So DEQ has two main types of air quality permits, Title V, which govern facilities that the EPA considers to be major sources of air pollution, and then air contaminant discharge permits, or ACDPs, which apply to facilities whose emissions fall below that Title V threshold, but above a certain minimum thresholds. Title V permits were established under the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990. To regulate emissions of six what are called criteria air pollutants, which are lead, carbon monoxide, smog, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and particulate matter, as well as 187 hazardous air pollutants. So air quality permits are important because these criteria pollutants and hazardous air pollutants are all known or suspected to cause cancer or other serious health effects. They increase the risk of cardiovascular and respiratory issues, lung disease, birth defects, developmental disorders, and also premature death. And they can negatively affect the environment as well. While these industrial sources of air pollution affect the state's air quality, there are also many other sources of air pollution. We don't want it to seem like there aren't any other sources of air pollution, including the burning of fossil fuels, forest fires, and residential wood stoves being particular problems. To address our audit objective, as Andrew said, we interviewed a number of stakeholders and agency staff, which included all of the air quality permitting staff in DEQ's regional offices. We went along with them on some compliance and complaint inspections. We interviewed and administered questionnaires to air agencies in other states to kind of get an idea what those states are doing and to contrast that with what DEQ is doing. And we analyzed agency permitting and workforce data.
Did you talk to any of the regulated community?
We did, yes. We did also talk to some of the regulated community.
How did you select those quote stakeholders?
Co-chairs and members of the committee, we talked to folks at DEQ and who they interact with regularly. We looked at some of the bigger, it used to be Associated Oregon Industries. I'm blanking on the name of the
OBI.
OBI, yes, OBI. We talked with the Pulp and Paper Association. We talked with some of the larger permit holders as well, since they have the most kind of interaction with this system. But a lot of the ride-alongs that we went on were with smaller, so it might just be a concrete producer or a gas station or things like that. So we tried to hit a number of different types of businesses.
Were those announced visits?
On Senator Johnson, there were some that were announced visits where they knew we were coming because we wanted to see what their operation was and how they managed and to get an idea of what their experience was in working with DEQ. But on others, we just kind of went along with an inspector and saw what they saw.
My curiosity is how forthcoming stakeholders would be for fear of retaliation. That's
okay.
So please continue.
Okay, sure. We found that DEQ has a significant backlog in its largest and most complex air quality permits, as Andrew said. The Clean Air Act, along with DEQ rules and guidelines, established timeframes for issuing new permits, renewing existing permits, and conducting inspections. As Andrew said, 43% of DEQ's most complex permits, that's 106 out of 246, are overdue for renewal. Additionally, more than 40% of the most complex permits that were actually issued from 2007 to 2017 exceeded the time frame set by the EPA or DEQ. And then approximately 9% of permit renewals took more than 5 years and were issued after the point when the next renewal should have been done. Some inspections are also overdue, but because of data limitations, the extent of that backlog is unclear, which is what Andrew was kind of hinting at earlier. We couldn't really tell how much there isn't. The system for tracking inspections isn't as advanced as they would like it to be, so it's hard to tell. You can tell what inspections have been scheduled, but you can't see when they're actually due, so it's hard to tell if they're overdue or not in that system.
Out of a universe of 246, it's hard to keep track of that?
Oh, that's just those are just the complex, just the most complex permits.
Ah.
There's a whole bunch of permits underneath that as well. There's about 2,500 permits in total, if you include general permits and some of the smaller ones.
Please continue.
Okay. Air quality permit renewals incorporate new and updated federal and state rules, but until a permit is renewed, businesses keep operating under their old permit. So when permits are not renewed on time, businesses may not have to provide DEQ with data showing that they're complying with the new rules. These delays create a gray area as well in terms of enforcement. So if a facility is violating one of the new standards that's not yet into their permit, how do you handle enforcement on that since it's not in the permit yet, but it's officially a rule that's on the books? Combined with the current backlog of inspections, untimely permits endanger the health of Oregonians and the state's environment. One example that we found was approximately 150 auto body shops in the Portland area that had opted out of a general ACDP permit, but which were still in need of a basic ACDP permit, which are just two different types of permits. At least some of these businesses have likely been emitting volatile organic compounds that contribute to smog for the last 7 years, because those permits just haven't been implemented in the Portland area. And then in a more extreme example, an asphalt company with numerous compliance violations was required to apply for a stricter permit. They submitted a standard ACDP application, which is the highest level of ACDP. It's just below, then above that you get into a Title V permit. They submitted that in 2012. However, as of November of 2017, that permit had not been issued yet, which means that the company had been allowed to operate under lower standards for years and has not been inspected since 2011. I believe there's some enforcement action going on around that, so there are a number of reasons for that, but it still has not been issued.
I'm struggling to understand that. So they haven't been inspected, or they haven't had their new permit issued.
Right.
They are then discharging under the old permit, and now an enforcement action comes from the agency that was unable or unwilling to upgrade the permit?
The enforcement action preceded them. So as part of the enforcement action, they had to get a higher level permit. They've put in the application for the permit, but that permit hasn't been issued yet, and so it's been sitting there since about 2012.
Okay. Well, I want to ask a question.
Sure. Representative McClinton.
My understanding that they might not give the permit then, or they might not, you know, process it if they don't feel like it's high enough standard, or they have some problem with the way they were going to express the higher standards. I mean, is there an evaluation process there when you have somebody turn in a permit? Is it complete? Does it meet the goal? Is it truly a higher standard?
There are standards that they have to meet in terms of before the application is considered to be complete, and that's determined between the permit writer and the inspector. I know there are certain things that they have to have in terms of sometimes emissions information and things like that. Is that what you're asking?
Well, I guess this seems important to me because sometimes you don't give a new permit or you don't give a higher permit and you start a different type of action like the one you talked about because the new permit will not meet the standards that you want to meet, or because there's something in the permit that you feel they had tools, they had application standards that they were going to use at their site. They have a way they're going to dispose of something. They have a limit on emissions or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't know which group of businesses this was, but you have to be able to make, before you can give the new permit, you've got to make sure that it meets the code. So isn't there a process for that, or?
That I'm not sure about what that process would be.
Because I think
one.
5 years, of course, that's too long for, you know, trying to get a new permit or a stricter permit. But if there's
right.
a reason in the process that something has happened that causes them not to be able to give it, well then, I'm just wondering, I don't remember seeing anything like that in your report, but.
We had talked, well, I think this example is in our report. It's in a little bit more detail in the report, see?
No, I read it. I'm
okay.
just saying that what you said verbally here it doesn't make sense to me, but I'll talk offline. How's that?
Oh, great, okay. Thank you, Coach. So our audit identified a number of a variety of factors that lead to DEQ's struggles to issue timely air quality permits. Vacancies and position cuts create unmanageable and unrealistic workloads. Of 28 permit writing positions, 7 were vacant as of August 2017. I think some of those have been filled, and Director Whitman can better answer that question as to what's been filled. Since then, that's when we got the data that we were looking at, and at that time, 7 of the 28 were unfilled. DEQ lacks consistent guidance and support for staff, which slows the permitting process. At the same time, the rules are getting more complex, but permit writers are receiving less guidance and support from operational staff at DEQ headquarters. And I believe there have been some challenges in their headquarters as well in terms of having enough staffing around some of these areas.
Did you analyze all of the deficiencies that you're laying out are pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
Did your audit give any real consideration to how much more DEQ is asking to have heaped onto it right now? With all of the various programs that are being proposed, they're not doing what they're supposed to do now, and they want more.
Mm-hmm. Co-Chair Johnson, we did look a little bit at that, but mostly we were focusing on this particular program. We knew that that was one thing that we thought about early on in the audit, is how is this, if they're unable to manage this process as it is, how is that going to either affect doing something like a Cleaner Air Oregon, or is Cleaner Air Oregon having an effect on the current process? And we saw some of that for sure, that there is an effect from some of those other programs. That's where sometimes staff gets pulled off into working on other things, and they're not able to provide support to the permit writers.
Thank you. Representative Woodson. Wisnett, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. On your analysis on page whatever it is, you made a comment. You state, while the audit appropriately outlines issues in the air quality program which could negatively affect air quality in Oregon, it should be noted that the air quality in Oregon has improved over the period of time discussed in this audit. The focus and scope of the audit was limited to the air quality program, but many other issues and findings identified by the Secretary of State as well as the agency are relevant to other DOQ programs. Can you please define what are you looking at? You talked about examples of concrete or different companies you've talked with, but what is the air quality limit of the air quality program? And could you tell me, you make a statement, can you quantify the air quality has increased during that period of time?
Madam Chair, may I introduce you? The document you're looking at is the yours. LFO analysis.
Hey, tell me,
not
can
the
you answer?
So I will jump in, although I could let you try to answer. But bottom line is, we did go back and look at against the standards that you measure. Wanted to give the context of, there's certainly the issues identified, but again, that if you look at how air quality has been measured over that period of time, we have seen an improvement in air quality. I believe the agency could give you more definition about that.
Thank you. Can you define what, you know, it says the air quality program, so that's not everything. It's not forest fires. That's not
correct. That was relative to because the air quality, so when we talked about air quality, that isn't relative to just the program. That is air quality in Oregon. The audit here, the next point was really that the audit here, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the audit here was focused on the air quality program and a lot of it on the permitting process of the air quality program. And the point is that as we look at this, the audit findings, and you'll kind of see the recommendations, some of the issues identified there, when they're followed up on, need to kind of be applied to other programs within the agency, because the findings and the issues are broader than necessarily the one program that was actually examined by the auditors.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, if I could respond and elaborate on that. There's a lot of different other factors that go into air quality outside of just the permitting process. The permitting process we were looking at talked about facilities that emit certain pollutants. There's also pollutants through wood burning, through gas, these things. And I think maybe what you're referring to is that over time air quality has improved, and a lot of that can be attributed to the success of the permitting process. That's why we feel it was so important for us to go and look at and see if they can continue that success. If they fall behind or too far behind in that, we don't have a lot of assurance that we are, that facilities are regulating themselves. And so the air quality permitting process coupled with the inspections really provides the people some assurance that government is doing whatever it could to protect their health and the environment. And that's what I think she was referring to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Carry on, please.
The last things that I had to say were, additionally, there were some competing compliance priorities that limit DEQ staff time for permitting activities. So on average, permit writers should be spending roughly 58% of their time on permitting activities. But when we looked at timekeeping data from 2015 to 16, it indicated that permit writers spent only an average of 49% of their time on permitting activities. Some staff has been diverted to other projects, such as Cleaner Air Oregon. And the DEQ is not fully or consistently documented its air quality permitting process, which makes it challenging to improve that process and makes it more difficult to find efficient ways, more efficient ways to issue permits, which is what Andrew was kind of noting before. That was kind of the first step as we envisioned it would be. You document that air quality permitting process. See if you can tighten that down. Then you have kind of a baseline for, well, how long does it take to issue a permit? Knowing that that will change depending on the type of permit and the type of business that you're looking at. Some are going to have lots of processes that are going to have to be permitted. Some will be more straightforward. But when you have kind of that baseline, then you can look at, okay, how much staff do we have to do this work? Do we have enough staff? And you can work on that. So that kind of doing some sort of a process improvement is kind of the first step in doing that workforce analysis, at least as we saw it. The audit report makes 10 recommendations to help DEQ address the backlogs and improve the permitting process. Among these, we recommend that DEQ evaluate permit writer workloads and staffing, improve permit and inspection tracking, provide better guidance, and conduct the process improvement effort.
Did you go back and review any of the individual exercises around permit renewals? I can think of one instance where DEQ, as it was described to me, spent an inordinate amount of time tracking down an alleged emitter. Had people on the weekends hiding in the bushes taking pictures. Did you look at time allotted among these very complex permit to see whether some of them become particular objects of affection of the agency? And some of them may be more cavalierly moved through the system?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, we didn't look at any of those specifically in that way. We mostly focused on kind of the process. We looked at the inspections as a part of this process, since it's a key to kind of maintaining that whole compliance process. If you're not doing the inspections, the permits don't mean that much, but we didn't focus specifically on the inspections or look at any particular inspections and see how long that took.
Thank you. Okay. Is that end of your report? We've interrupted you so many times,
fine.
It doesn't surprise me that you've lost your train of thought.
No, that's weird.
All right. Mr. Love, anything more you want to add?
No, there's nothing else.
All right. Thank you. Then with that, we will invite up the agency. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair McLean, members of the committee. For the record, my name's Richard Whitman. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this important audit from the Secretary of State and the report from your staff. We appreciate the time that both the Secretary of State and your staff have put into looking at this issue. This is an important issue. When we're talking about air quality, we're talking about public health. And so to the extent the agency is not meeting its responsibilities in terms of permitting and inspections around air quality, there can be public health consequences. So I take this very seriously. The Secretary of State came to us about a year ago and asked for our input on what aspect of the agency's programs in the air arena we thought that they should look at. We suggested that they look at the permitting program for Title V and for the air contaminant discharge permit program, because we believed that there were developing backlogs in the permitting work in this area of the agency that needed to be addressed. So at a high level, the agency agrees with the findings and recommendations of the Secretary of State and appreciates the further recommendations from your committee staff. I want to take this opportunity, if I might, just to touch on a few things to give you a little bit more context about what's going on at Oregon DEQ around these issues. First of all, we are well along in a realignment of leadership in the agency. I have 15 people on my leadership team. In another 2 months, 9 of those 15 either will be new on the leadership team within the last year or so. So there's a major shift going on in the leadership of the agency. We are recruiting nationally. We're bringing in expertise from other agencies and from other parts of the nation to lead this agency. We are also, Co-Chair.
How many total vacancies does that bring you? And when you say you've got 9 new people on the leadership team, 9 out of 15 are new, what's your total vacancy count?
I will give, Co-Chair Johnson, I'll give you an approximation. We're about 110 to 120 positions below the legislatively approved number of positions for the agency. I will get you an exact number in follow-up.
I would appreciate that, not just with respect to DEQ, although out of your whole universe, what percentage are you down, do you think?
Co-Chair Johnson, that's roughly about 15%.
Okay. It's not just how far down your agency is and what you're doing in terms of recruitment and trying to attract new people and why so many are leaving and that sort of stuff. But I think it also raises a question across state government about recruiting practices. And ODOT, for example, is struggling to fill project manager slots in Region 1. And maybe it's time for a larger conversation about compensation, recruitment, working conditions, benefits, whatever else it is that's making us less competitive with business, arguably in a red-hot economy right now. But I'm trying to figure out, is it people just don't want to go to work for you, or 15% vacancy, not totally unheard of, but...
Right. So, Co-Chair Johnson, a couple of things. First of all, a lot of people in DEQ have gray hair like I do, and they are retiring. And we are seeing a wave of retirements in the agency. That's the primary driver for the number of vacancies in leadership in the agency. In terms of the larger picture, the 15% difference between legislatively approved and actual, that is primarily a function of what we can actually afford to do given the fee levels that have been approved by the legislature and, in fairness, recommended by the agency. The AIR program in particular is almost 90% fee funded and 10% general fund. So the revenue hasn't kept up with the cost of those actual positions.
The only piece you left out is the parsimonious legislature. You mentioned them, and you mentioned the paltry fees. The piece you didn't mention was the tolerance of business to keep paying.
Yes. So, Co-Chair Johnson, this is part of a larger discussion that we will have with the fee payers and other partners as we come up to the 2019 and probably, frankly, 2021 session. I'm not suggesting that we're going to fix this problem overnight. I'm also, to be clear, not suggesting that there necessarily has to be an enormous increase in the number of staff that DEQ has, particularly for this program. We have to document first what is the number of people we actually need to run a program at the level that Oregonians expect us to. That was one of the recommendations that Secretary of State's office made, and we're in the midst of that right now. We can make process improvements. I believe we can address part of this problem by being better organized and providing the support to our permit writers that the Secretary of State suggests are needed.
Well, and deciding what are your priorities. I mean, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum. There was plenty of time to conspire with OHA to write an elaborate communications plan with respect to operation south of here. Those people were diverted from where? What other time was taken to do that kind of activity? I mean, you know how strongly I feel about how inappropriate that was, but that took bodies in your agency to do that. And somebody must have given them authorization to go ahead and engage in that elaborate communication scheme when you're this far behind. That's the kind of stuff I'm trying to figure out.
And Co-Chair Johnson, you're very right to point that out as a part of the cause of the problem here. And I want to speak to that directly. So right now, our permitting staff are fairly routinely getting pulled off of writing permits and having to go work on controversies in particular communities. So not only the one that you refer to, I can name half a dozen others across the state where staff have spent substantial time dealing with these same sorts of crises. One right here in Salem, GNB Battery, where we had a significant lead problem, which has been cleaned up. But those situations take enormous time. The Secretary of State's audit identifies that as one of the core causes of the permit backlog. Until we have a program that provides stability and predictability around those issues, we're going to continue to have ad hoc situations that chew up a lot of staff time.
And if I'm interpreting predictability, meaning you parsimonious legislators better give us more money, I think the flip side of that equation is we want to see a demonstration of appropriate use of staff and yes, and an adequate way to redress the backlog and all of the things that we expect from a well-running agency.
Co-Chair Johnson, I am not going to come back to this legislature and ask either for fee increases or for more money for these core programs without being able to demonstrate to you that we've done everything possible within our capability to use the resources you have already provided to the agency as efficiently and effectively as possible. Understood. All right.
Let me just ask one other thing.
Sure.
Unless my memory is incorrect, have you guys not just gotten a huge settlement in my district? Well into seven figures?
Co-Chair Johnson, we have in the cleanup program, and this is for the Armstrong property.
Correct.
At Scappoose Bay.
Correct.
Yes, we have.
And is any of that money fungible across programs?
Co-Chair Johnson, it is not. That money has to be used on cleanup of that particular site. And frankly, that is a priority, and we hope to get in and start that work very soon.
Yeah, it's a difficult site.
Yeah.
Okay, please continue.
Okay, I do want to briefly give the committee a sense of the work that we are already doing to implement the recommendations that the Secretary of State has provided. So very briefly, one of the core recommendations was, and we've talked about this to some degree already, to document what staff are currently spending their time on very carefully so we can see, you know, where there are opportunities for improving efficiency of permit processing. One of the problems here is we've got permit writers doing multiple functions, writing permits, doing inspections, responding to complaints. We have the same issue in our water permitting program and have recently instituted a system where we have a team of folks who only do permit writing. We're likely to be looking at the same thing for the AIR program as well. But first, we have to start out with a careful analysis of what people are spending their time on.
Mr. Whitman, would that include time off and, in some cases, lengthy vacations? I mean, is it, I don't know if it's common that you have folks taking multiple week holidays. I don't know. But are you looking not only across what is their portfolio of work, but what days are staff, especially senior management, actually in the building?
Co-Chair Johnson, that is not part of this particular analysis, but in a more general sense, I have been looking at vacancies issue and in terms of leave time issues.
That's precisely what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Another issue that was raised in the Secretary of State's audit was the failure to redo the permits for auto body shops in the Portland metro area. And this is about 150 businesses that were under what's called a general permit that are no longer under that general permit. Many, but not all, of those facilities need to be under what we call a basic permit, which is the simplest form of an air quality permit for the department. And so the Northwest Region Air Manager is working to, with his staff, to contact those businesses and get the ones that meet the thresholds for having to have a permit signed up in under that program.
And how do you know, as you are managing a large backlog of permits, how do you know that there is an equitable enforcement causing them to come online roughly the same time? We've talked about this in the water discharge permits in the seafood processing, where if McLean Finer Seafood and Wisnet Finer Seafood both need permit renewals and you do one and not the other, you've automatically established a dislocation of competitive advantage. And how do you not disrupt the marketplace if there's not some degree of integrity on the timeline of the issuance of those permits, where you're letting a scofflaw continue to operate at competitive advantage and the other subject to the enforcement is now at a competitive disadvantage?
Co-Chair Johnson, I appreciate the question because it actually it's a broader problem with the permit backlog because it creates inequities across the business community for folks who have had their permit renewed and those who have not. But with regard to the auto body program in particular, this is a permit, and I have a copy of it with me if you'd like to see it, that is several pages to fill out. It's very simple. It can be done in a short period of time. And so the plan of the manager in this case is to work with all the businesses within a 3-month period and get them, those that need to be on board, on board.
Thank you. That's very reassuring.
Yep. All right. So succession planning is another issue that the Secretary of State identified as an issue for the AIR program. And as I said at the outset, this is an issue really across state government generally. The Secretary of State recently did a statewide audit on this subject. The workforce at DEQ has one of the highest tenures of any state agency in terms of the number of years that people have worked at the same agency. So we have a very large number or proportion of our workforce who are nearing or are at or even beyond retirement age. So this is a very real issue for us. And the AIR program is working to identify what are the key positions in each of the regional offices where there is only one person who has the knowledge in a particular key area, and working to start to pair that person with another staff person so we start to spread that knowledge out and build some resilience into our system. So those are some of the immediate steps that we're taking at the agency level.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Whitman, do you have an active intern program with our universities? A lot of people, I mean, I think that's a way to help with those discussions.
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair McLean, Representative Wisnett, we have an intern program. I don't know how active I would characterize it as. I think it could be much more active, and particularly in some of these technical fields, I think there is more opportunity to start bringing young people into new careers through opportunities at the agency. This is something I'm very interested in looking at. We're not doing it yet, though, to be clear.
As a member,
follow up.
As a member of the Higher Ed House Committee, we encourage that.
Great, thank you. The last thing I want to say, just respecting the committee's time, is again to go up a level in terms of talking about this issue. We have created a system. I'll say the agency has created a system where we have a misalignment of incentives for both the agency and I think for the businesses that we work with. Right now, we are supposed to renew permits after a five-year period. However, there is no penalty to the business if we don't renew the permit. Further, there's no fee associated with the renewal of the permit. So if I were a business sitting out there and my permit hadn't been renewed and I was operating under my old permit, I would not be all that worried about that situation. And I don't think it's really fair to blame the business community for that. I'm not quite sure how this system got set up, but we are going to have a discussion about how to better align incentives so that it's in everybody's interest to get these permits up to date, keep them up to date, and get the system running more smoothly. That's a longer conversation. It may take several sessions to work through that. And with that, I'll close. I'd be happy to answer any questions folks might have.
Across your portfolio, and I don't know exactly what the examination was. I think it had, I don't know. But across your portfolio, how do you decide when the inspections are going to happen? I was just made aware over the weekend of an inspection that happened at a business in my district. It's probably not an air permit, but I don't know that for sure. This is one of the tidiest, most immaculate operations. And they apparently, I haven't seen it yet, but I've asked for a copy. And I hesitate to bring it up, frankly, for fear of retaliation. But they have an immaculate yard, and they were written up for a couple of little dings in impervious surfaces. And I'm thinking to myself as I drove here on Highway 30 this morning, which is a bone-jarring experience anymore, why it is that a freshly poured asphalt laydown yard is subject to being chastised. And you got holes in Highway 30 big enough to bury a dog in. And I'm trying to figure out, how do you decide what you're going to go look at? Is there a regular rotation where business can expect that, whether it's air or water or whatever, so it doesn't have this gotcha feel to it?
Co-Chair Johnson, there are two basic answers to your question. One is that there is a regular inspection schedule. I believe it's once every 3 years for most permits, but we'll follow up and get you the exact information. And secondly, and more directly responsive to your question, we do inspections often in response to complaints. And so, you know, if there was a surprise for this particular facility, it may well be that somebody saw something and made a complaint.
Colleagues, I would just like us all to keep in mind that so many of our agencies are complaint driven, and we are bringing the power of the might of the state of Oregon to bear on neighbor to neighbor crankiness. And I specifically call out my old favorite guys over at Division of State Lands. This is sort of like the Rat Fink response. I don't like Courtney, and I call up and I say, he's got pesticide leaking out of his garage. And the next thing that happens is you show up, and then XYZL shows up, and there may be nothing more to it than cranky neighbors. I think we've got to figure out a standard that elevates this whole thing so that the fire alarm doesn't ring every time a cranky neighbor calls and rats out another neighbor.
Co-Chair Johnson, I largely agree with you and think that
we write that down. That's a first.
I think we need to figure out a way for, you know, for prioritizing these, because we're getting, frankly, we're getting eaten alive by complaints right now.
Well, I was just down on the ground in Tillamook. This was not your agency. It was DSL. And it was a neighbor calling and ratting out another neighbor. And we took the agency down there, and I had the Farm Bureau. I had 15 people on the ground. Came to pass that it was being done just exactly correctly. Mm-hmm. But when I think of the amount of money that was wasted that day to go down and say everything's fine, we got to figure out a better air traffic control so that you're dispatching people, whether it's air or water or what it is, to real instances where the public health is endangered, and you're not adjudicating neighbors across a fence being mad at each other.
Coacher Johnson, I would love to put some energy into trying to figure out a better way of doing it, and would simply ask for others to join us in that
We
effort.
May have found a point of common ground, Mr. Whitman. A pleasure for me.
On that note.
Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. Just to be clear on the workload analysis that you're doing, is it within the program that was audited, or is it within the whole agency?
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair McLean, and Senator Thatcher, it's within this particular, the two programs that were audited by the Secretary of State. We are doing workload analysis in our water program also to some degree. But it's unrelated to this audit.
Okay. I guess I don't know if there's any crossover from this program to other programs within the agency, but it does seem like it would be beneficial to look at the entire agency in balance within before coming to us for more resources, perhaps. And then I had another question on something else, different. But you had mentioned a general permit versus a basic permit, and you mentioned that the basic permit is simpler. And
yes.
I'm wondering, simpler for the business to comply with, simpler for DEQ to administer, both? What simpler in what way?
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair McLean, Senator Thatcher, in both respects. It's simpler to fill out the application, it's simpler to comply with, and simpler for us to monitor.
Okay. All right, yep. Thank you.
Representative McLean.
I really have a comment, not really a question. I wanted to say that I really agree with the complaint-driven model as being what I consider to be the worst model, the least proactive model. And really, I know it sometimes is a survival model as well, but it's definitely something that I think will improve any agency and any organization if we have a proactive, very specific, very clear process on how we do our work, whether it be permitting or inspection. So I do agree with that and hope we can have a chance to work on that.
Thank you.
And I heard a commitment from you also on, as far as looking at the workload, really trying to figure out, what is happening with the folks that are in the agency now, really trying to do an analysis of what are our resources, how are our FTE working, how are they acting, where are they spending the majority of the time, where are the priorities of our agency because of where our FTE is spending their time.
Yeah.
And I think that analysis is absolutely the base analysis mm-hmm. or suggestion in any way, shape, or form that has been made by anyone. Toward your agency or some others as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I really thank you for that and hope that we get a chance to see what that looks like, because I think that's the basis of going forward in a more productive way.
Right.
So I want to thank you for that. And then the other issue was, I thought it was very interesting. We've in a couple of different audits, but this one especially, when you think about the combination of work that some FTE do, whether it be permit writing or inspection or, like you said, complaint-driven work that they have to go out and kind of, make sure that they're solving a problem that has sprouted because of a complaint, there's sometimes some really crazy things going on, both in credibility, both in should we have people writing permits and inspecting. And, is that a conflict of interest almost? Or are they becoming not new eyes or fresh eyes because they're doing both ends of the system? But I think there's some mm-hmm. real interesting analysis that should be done there as well.
If I might, Co-Chair McLean, Co-Chair Johnson, in somewhat in response to Senator Thatcher's remarks also, our water permitting program is about a year ahead of our air program going through a similar evaluation, and we are drawing from the analysis of the water program to some of the lessons we're learning there, I think, are applicable in the air program along the lines that you just described. So we are looking at that.
Great.
Before you withdraw, one other question. There are aspects of this audit that are pretty serious. And to what degree, if any, have you discussed this with your commission? And how engaged are they? Do they have copies of the audit? What has happened there?
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair McLean, we have discussed this with our commission. We kept our commission informed in a general way as the audit was going along, and have discussed the audit findings and recommendations with them, and they're supportive of implementing the recommendations.
I would hope that that's memorialized in some way, that it's a motion and activity reflected in minutes or something that shows that the commission was apprised of an audit that is not without some pretty serious findings. So that's just a thought.
Okay.
All right. Colleagues, any other questions for Mr. Whitman?
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McHugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, a couple of things to point out from our analysis and then the recommendation is, first, that the topic and scope of this audit were found to be very timely, in line with the needs of the agency, and really consistent with information that had previously been discussed in legislative meetings. A couple of things we'd want to point out is the agency is going through some change in organizational structure, having discontinued something that was begun in 2014 following analysis by Mass Ingenuity. They've kind of gone back to their former structure, but they have indicated, as you heard, working with the lean process improvement analysis in the upcoming months. The resources issue is not new. We did want to point out in the discussion of positions that specifically in air quality permitting what those numbers are, so you'll see those in our analysis. And in terms of budgeted positions, those also have reduced over time from 68 to 57 FTE. Actual filled has gone from about 60 to 55. And again, the number of filled positions really reflects the amount of revenue available. In fact, the low point was in 05, 07, and 07, 09 when 53 FTE were approved. It is anticipated.
Ms. McHugh, again, I don't want these reports or the presentations to always come back to the legislature's failure to provide resources. I think the dates that you just ticked off coincided with a general economic malaise that had swept over the entire state, if not the country. And I don't want to leave the impression that the legislature had singled out DEQ for shabby fiscal treatment. I think this has to be seen in the context that many agencies were being asked to manage to reduced budgets at that point because we simply didn't have the money.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, absolutely. And even in terms of when you look at some of the vacancies that are open right now, there was an action, executive branch action this last biennium to freeze positions. So what you would find in DEQ is not that dissimilar from what you would find in a number of agencies. So that is absolutely right. We also found that there is discussion about really working with permittees on a number of issues, the complaint process, and we would recommend that you include evaluating the fee structure and the amount of funding needed in an overall way at that time as well.
May I stop you and ask one other question? Maybe this goes to the auditors, but I don't know to what degree there was any discussion of the costs of litigation, where somehow customer service agency expectations have bumped up against each other, and citizens have felt the need to fight back and have turned to litigation. So I don't know whether or not any of your work touched on cost of litigation.
Chairs, members of the committee, we didn't spend a lot of time on the cost of litigation. No,
and that's fine. It's not a criticism. It's just a curiosity. In some cases, folks have felt the need to fight back, and especially when there's been the hint of retaliation or singling out particular industries, and I'm just wondering if any of those resources could be better deployed in doing the work of the agency rather than mounting litigation. So it's more a rhetorical question. Thank you. Please continue.
We would note that the timeline identified by the agency to complete the work in response to the recommendations appears to be somewhat aggressive, with most of that work being anticipated to be completed by July 2018. And again, we would anticipate that there might be some things that would have to be revisited as a result of any findings from the workload analysis and the lean process improvement. So we would like an update, but we would like notification to the Joint Committee when that's completed. Finally, there are specific actions, action items from the agency response that will require attention and follow-up during the 2019 session, both in policy committees as well as ways and means. And again, we would note that discussions regarding the need for additional funding, staffing, or other changes to the program have to be done as part of the regular process and have to be done in the context of all priorities and competing resource needs. With that, we would recommend acknowledging receipt of the audit report.
Thank you. Before the chair accepts a motion, you said there may have to be follow-up. Do you contemplate that we would ask for follow-up or just hope that it occurs, or may a motion to acknowledge receipt of the report include the recommendation that there be a time certain report back?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, at this point, LFO is tracking the recommendations and the responses from the agencies and has requested that the agencies notify us when they complete that work. So that's kind of built into that, that recommendation.
Thank you. All right. With that, the chair would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that we accept the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations on the Department of the Environmental Air Quality Program.
Colleagues, any questions?
Well, I just...
Senator Thatcher.
Quorum questions?
Thank you.
You're right. We don't have to...
Thank you.
I know
thank
we're
you.
Just accepting a report.
Yes,
thank
not.
You.
Thank
you. You return at an opportune moment. To bring you up to speed, LFO has gone through that. We're in work session. LFO has gone through their recommendation, and we have a motion.
Thank you.
To accept the LFO recommendation.
Yes.
All right, and thank you for pointing that out. Now, with a quorum established, are there any questions, any discussion, any objection? We accept the LFO recommendation. Ms. McHugh, anything else for the good of the order?
No, I think we anticipate... on Wednesday, discussing the education audits, both the graduation rates and alternative online education.
Thank you. Colleagues, anything else? Then we are adjourned.
Here's your beautiful pen.
Oh, thank you.
Thank